Hello, you're watching the Lay Novel Street video series on the theology of the body. This video is dedicated to Audience 41. We are your hosts. I am Jeremy Hossotter.
And I'm Guillermo Moreno.
Right. So, to dive into this audience, it's a little bit more technical than some of the other ones, and I do want to apologize ahead for that. So, we want to begin by considering who is the man that looks to desire. And we first need to take into account that there are two dimensions of intentionality. Now, intentionality is an important philosophical term, especially within the school of phenomenology. It's one of the current philosophical schools. And intentionality is, I guess in general, it's the relationship between an object and a subject. So when you think about the act of willing, when you will something, you have the object that is being willed and you have the subject who is willing. When you have someone, when you're thinking, you have the object you're thinking about and you have the subject who is doing the thinking. And these are examples of intentionality. We do talk about this concept in a lot more detail. Guillermo, do you remember which audience that was?
I don't. I'm sorry about that.
Okay, I can look it up here. So, this concept of intentionality, let's see here. Which audience was it? Oh, yes, audience 25. Okay, so if you go to our video and for audience 25, we do give a much more thorough and depth discussion of this idea. So what we want to think about is that two dimensions of intentionality. So you have this intentionality of looking, okay? This has a psychological dimension to it. JP2 calls it concupiscent knowledge. And essentially, when you think about looking, you have the object you're looking at, and then you have the subject who is doing the looking. So this is, we can call this intentional looking or the intentionality of looking. So this is one dimension of intentionality. The second dimension is this intentionality of existence. So this is to say that concupiscence will determine how man interacts with the other person. In a case of a man, this is how he will interact with the woman, whether he treats her as an object or not. So the man of concupiscence will look at the other woman in a manner where he just sees her as an object to be used. And so this seeing her as an object to be used places the woman in this intentionality of existence where her existence is simply for man's gratification for his use, an object to be used. This is the intentionality of existence. And here we have this nice quote by JP2. So begin quote. He shows in this way who the woman is at whom he looks to desire, or rather, who she becomes for the man. Thus, the intentionality of knowledge determines and defines the intentionality of existence itself. End quote. So, when man looks at the woman, this intentionality of looking is this intentionality of concupiscent desire and, or concupiscent knowledge. And so, when man has this concupiscent desire towards a woman, this reduces her existence to simply being an object for him. So, from the perspective of the man, he as a subject is interacting with the woman as nothing more than an object. to be possessed, used, consumed, and then disposed of when he is done. And that intentionality of existence is the problem, because he, the man, is not treating the woman as an object who is also a person. So to play on that term object, use it in this other manner, when this kind of subject-object relationship is in such a manner that the woman is not treated according to her personhood, according to her dignity as a person, and just as a mere object to be used. And so in this sense, we can say that the woman is deprived of her dignity as a person, since she is treated simply as an object to be consumed for man's sexual gratification. And this is how her existence stands for the man of concupiscence. Guillermo, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
All right. Did you have anything you'd like to add on to this?
I just think that another way to phrase what's going on is that the woman's dignity is being violated.
I like that.
Yeah.
You want to elaborate more?
Yes, because so person's dignity is intact no matter the circumstances. So I'm trying to find maybe a good analogy. I can't off the top of my head, but yeah, no one loses their dignity because they're being used. Rather, the standard is not being lived up to. In fact, it is actually the subject is, in their perspective, diminishing the value of the other person. I think that's what I mean by that the dignity is violated.
All right. Yeah. Now, I think that's a good point. You have this violation of the dignity of the other because you're not treating their existence as personal existence, mm-hmm. but just as object existence,
yes.
so to speak.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, that's a I like that a lot.
Thank you.
All right. Let's see here. Find our cursor. There we go. Oops, wrong way. All right. So the change in intentionality for existence. So this change in the intentionality for existence of the other person into an object for my gratification is not the result of attraction. So if we recall from the previous audience, TOB 40, then we made a careful distinction between attraction and desire. And attraction takes into account the value of the person, such that the value of the body and its sex is integrated within the value of the person, whereas desire emphasizes the value of the body to the denigration of the value of the person. The value of the body is placed over and against in opposition to the value of the person. So the value of the person is not even considered with respect to how the individual with desire is treating the other. And so there are two levels to this change. On the first level, we have this cognitive level, this cognitive intentionality. And so the woman is deprived of her attraction as woman and seen simply as a possible object for a man's sexual gratification. This begins at the cognitive level. And then at a deeper level with a man's spirituality, or within his interiority, within the heart of man, when you get this enslavement of the heart occurring when the will of man is in conformity with this objectification, when he starts acting or willing the attitudes, the external actions in conformity with this objectification of the woman. And this enslavement of the heart is proportional to the degree that man's will is involved in the objectification of the other person. And we can note two levels of the will's involvement, though this is a distinction that JP2 does not make here. We can think of the will's involvement in terms of sanctioning the cognitive intentionality. So if a man has a thought that is consistent with concupiscent desire of a woman, the will can affirm that thought. That affirmation is now a taking into the concupiscent of desire within the heart of man. So that's the first level. And then like a second level, we could think of the acting out of the exterior act in conformity with this interior act of objectification. So you can have this interior affirmation of objectification of the other person, but that is different from actually acting it out, because this is with interior within the heart of man. Then now you can have the actual him asking the girl, hey, do you want to go to a hotel and have sex? Do you want to fornicate? Do you want to be adulterers? Of course, they're going to not phrase it in that manner, but essentially what they're asking, do you want to perform this deed where not only do we become adulterers in the heart, but adulterers in the body? And that's a second level of involvement of the will. The first one, you have the heart involved, and in the second, you now have the heart and the body acting in conformity with this objectification. Guillermo, do you have anything you'd like to add here?
I would just like to emphasize the fact that even if it's mutual, that doesn't stop the objectification from being objectification as such. So I think sometimes just in our fallen world, we look for ways to rationalize our actions. And one of those ways is saying, okay, but we both agree to it. Okay. Well, that's part of the problem. That doesn't make it okay. Just because we agree to this, that doesn't make the morality of an action good.
Right. I like how you brought that up, this kind of consent ethos we have today.
Yes.
If the two parties consent, then it's sexually valid or morally valid sexual act. And that's just nonsense.
Yeah.
If people can consent to doing murder, that doesn't make the act of murder okay.
Or someone could consent to helping someone commit suicide.
Right.
That's still homicide.
Right. You're accessory to the death of that person. Yeah. In this case, whether it's fornication, adultery, you name it.
Yeah.
The mere consent does not give you moral permissibility.
Correct. And while we're on the topic of consent, okay, well, what about rape? Ah, well, that's a whole other, that's something else entirely.
Right.
You know,
that's a lack of consent.
Yes. What's the word I'm looking for? Yeah, it's another sin. And obviously at the criminal level.
Well, all sins are criminal with respect to the heart.
Okay. Yes. And then I was thinking of.
Yeah, you're thinking legally. Like legal. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to mess with you for a moment.
No. All right.
Yeah. No. It does raise interesting questions, though, this consent, especially like when you have the woman having a rape fetish. And so she gives consent to be raped. It's like, what is that supposed to be? Because you're giving consent to something that you're not supposed to give consent to.
I would imagine just being as less graphic as possible. I think there's a thing, maybe it's a fetish for sadism
Well,
rather than rape.
no, that's legitimately called a rape
But
fetish.
that's a contradiction.
I know. That's a weird thing. You get the masochism, sadism, whatnot, but then you have this thing where it's like you're trying to exercise being raped.
All right.
Yeah. No,
Well,
it just goes to show what concupiscence
oh
does
yeah. Oh yeah.
because,
That helps.
yeah, the level of destruction it has when it comes to our bodies and their sexual meaning. Yeah. All right, moving on. The sexual urge. When concupiscence gains mastery over the will, then concupiscence dominates the subjectivity of the person. And remember, the subjectivity is that which is properly what makes a person person. So we're talking about self-consciousness, self-determination, free will, the ability to reason, and many, many more things. All these things that properly makes man a person become dominated by concupiscence when it gains mastery over our will. So when we affirm will, the concupiscent desire, we start giving concupiscence control over our lives. And the more we give into it, the more it gains mastery over ourselves, such that we no longer have self-mastery. But concupiscence now has mastery over us. And if you do not have self-mastery over yourself, then you are a slave. And concupiscence becomes the slave master. Now, the criticism of the objectification of people being reduced to their sexual value alone, this does not call into question the sexual urge itself. The sexual urge, JB2 will affirm, has a legitimate role within the life of man. It has an objective role when it comes to procreation that is rooted in human nature. It's part of the dynamism between man and woman, that attraction that man has towards femininity and woman towards masculinity. It's an important part of our lives. And that's not rejected. But it has to be integrated within the value of the person, part of the whole, can't just be isolated and placed above the human person and his or her value. And so, this affirmation of the sexual urge itself is a rejection of Manichaeism, which we've talked about briefly before in TOB 36. So, if you want further information, you can check out that video or wait for a future video when we go into more detail about Manichaeism, because that is actually a topic coming up again. So, what is at stake then is living in such a manner that the sexual urge can serve to build up the communion of persons. And this is the proper living out of the sexual urge in its fundamental meaning, to live it out integrated within the communion of persons. And in doing so, the value of the man and the woman are both properly respected and being responded to accordingly. Guillermo, do you have anything else you would like to add?
I do not.
Okay, I think this might be the end. Nope, not quite. So, some concluding remarks then. So, the damage of treating another person as an object for sexual gratification includes that this is going to be contrary to the communion of persons, contrary to the conjugal unity of man and woman from the beginning. That is to say that treating a person as an object for sexual gratification is contrary to the original vision of God for man and woman. It's a contradiction to the mystery of creation. And it's also contrary to the nature of attraction, which we talked about before, where attraction is it requires this integration of the value of the person with the value of the body and its sex. So it is a good thing to have a sexual urge and to be attracted to the other person, but it has to be integrated within the value of the person. So this treating of the other as a sexual object to be used reduces the person to the dimension of sexual value and eliminates the personal meaning that is inherent in attraction. And so concupiscence removes the intentional dimension of reciprocal existence from the perspective of communion and reduces attraction towards utilitarianism, within which the other is treated as an object for sexual gratification. All right, last chance, Guillermo. Anything else you'd like to say?
I just wanted to highlight how JP2 segues into utilitarianism in this audience. That's it.
Did you have anything you want to say about utilitarianism?
Let's look at the next audiences and then I'll be sure to do so.
Okay. Yeah. It's not really talked about in the upcoming audiences.
It. Oh, it's not?
No, it's not. At least I don't recall it being mentioned in the next few. We know it's coming. I don't think it's going to be like within the next 5 audiences.
Oh, okay.
Or more.
Yeah. No, I would just like to, it's a little redundant. I'm just pointing out how we're using persons and we touched on this actually a few audiences ago, or did we? Point being, what comes to mind when it comes to utilitarianism, I think in terms of materialism, what things are most useful for me in whatever way, shape, or form I deem necessary. And it's disturbing to see how what usually applies to material items, well, guess what? We do that to persons who are infinitely beyond material items. And to experience such a thing as concupiscence that reduces people to almost to the level of material items, that highlights the reductionism all the more.
Yeah, no, those are good concluding thoughts.
Thank you.
Yeah. In case anyone was wondering, utilitarianism is the ethical theory that measures the good in terms of use. So something is morally good if it's useful, and it's morally evil if it's not useful. That theory has, it's pretty much radical. It's pretty much radical. If you are interested in learning more, I would highly recommend you check out the encyclical Veritatis Splendor by John Paul II.
I also would like to recommend Falkstein's Introduction to the Theology of the Body.
Okay, yep. Yeah, that's another good point. The Thank introduction you. At the beginning mm-hmm. of this book.
Yes.
All right. With that, thank you for watching our video. If you have been enjoying our content, please subscribe, like, share, and comment on our social media. And our social media platforms include things such as Facebook, YouTube, amongst others. Further, if you have been enjoying our content, please consider making a financial donation to us. either through Patreon or PayPal. Your financial support goes towards the maintenance of our website and the purchase of resources so that we can continue providing you with great materials that you know and love, whether it's something like our videos on theology of the body or articles on our website. On our website, lenovelesprit.com, we have many, many articles that you can enjoy all for free. And we also have a podcast. Guillermo, do you have more information about our podcast?
I do. In our other podcast series, we talk about a variety of topics, such as trends in culture and politics. We always address them from a Catholic personalist perspective. We upload our episodes onto buzzsprout.com, and you could locate our page using the La Novela Esprit website under the podcast category. And you could also listen to us directly on Buzzsprout or use it to locate us in other popular podcast platforms, such as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify.
All right. To be clear, if you're wondering where at to find our social media, you can just simply go to lenovelesprit.com/subscribe. That has all of our social media profiles, our Patreon and PayPal links, and the various podcast distribution platforms we are on. Do you have any last things, Guillermo?
I would just like to ask our viewers and our listeners to keep us and our mission in your prayers.
Yes. Please remember to pray for us. And with that, we will see you next time.
Bye, everyone. God bless.